All right, so we're back. Another episode. We got our friend here, Joe Hanna, who I just met. But introduce yourself, if you would.
I am the grooviest guy you will ever hear.
We're hoping. Ooh, I'm loud.
That's right. You can keep it high.
Yeah. Apparently, I've been quiet these last ones.
Yeah, so. The last couple you've been real quiet. Yep. So.
Yeah. I'm a legend in my own mind.
In your mind's eye, you know that's. Yeah. That's usually the hard one to convince.
Oh, no, not me.
So you're just saying you have 7 kids.
Yes. They start at 42 and go down to 26.
Okay.
And 12 grandchildren.
Oh, so that's one?
That's one. She lives with us.
Okay.
Her mother died, and so we're raising her, too. So I'm on number 8. And then my brother-in-law lived with us for a long time. When he was younger, so I'm on number 9.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how do you know the Apels?
Isaac's granddad is one of the best friends I've ever had in my life.
You know, you're probably not the only person that could say that. You know, it seems to be a common theme.
Yeah,
everyone knows my grandpa.
Scott and Linda are an amazing couple.
They are, yeah.
And Scott is one of my prayer partners, him and Libby Hansford.
Very cool, very cool. So for anyone who might be listening that doesn't know what a prayer partner is, would you define that relationship?
Anytime I have a need, any time of the day or night, I can call Scott and Libby and know that they are taking me to the throne of God instantly.
Right.
And I have, we've went to church together for probably 30 years, and I had heard the Apel name before that because his dad and mom had a Bible study in Oil City, and when I first got saved in 1974, you just don't remember that, do you?
No, that's 10 years before me.
Yeah, but anyways, I had heard about the Apel's Bible study in Oil City.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so wow, you guys are like famous for generations. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it seems like it.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
It's going to stop with him, though.
Yeah, it's probably. Interesting is though that what you guys like are pretty well known for is actually faith. You know, you have your dad has his business, your grandpa has his. You know, I don't know what your great granddad did, but
he was a carpenter also.
Was he as well?
Yes.
And but that isn't what defined the family.
No.
You know, is you know, your great granddad had his Bible study and that was well known, and then you know, your granddad and his faith and your family obviously with Seth's accident, you know, and just how you guys, your faith was just thrown to the forefront of that.
I got a really cool story about legacy passing down through the generations, if I'm allowed to talk about it.
Please do.
Okay. Every year, we take 2 trips to New York City to work with the homeless. Mm-hmm. And how we got started going there, our youth group started going. Now it's mostly older people. But my oldest daughter was 15. And I've always told the kids, I was youth leader for years and years, probably 25 years. And anyways, I always told the kids, any opportunity God opens a door, step through it. And let him use you, because in that hour, he will give you what you need to say. Because it's scriptural.
And so yeah.
Here we are. We're up in, it's called Nysom. And they said, hey, the Bowery Mission called us. And they've never called us on a Saturday before. That's always reserved for higher level people they bring in. But today, they don't have anybody. And they called us and asked us if we wanted to send some people over to give testimonies. And I said, yeah, me and my daughter will go. And she said, Dad, what are we going to say? And I said, don't worry about it. I said, when we get there, the Holy Spirit will let you know. And so we are at the Bowery Mission. And I get up to share. And she said, Dad, what are you going to talk about? And I said, don't worry about it. I said, you just follow my lead. And so I get up and I shared how blessed I was to be there and how I love missions and I love going to other countries and I love going out sharing the gospel. And I said, and this is a legacy that's passed down, I said, because my grandfathers on both sides were lay pastors. And I said, and they both loved the Lord. I said, my mom and dad, their whole goal in life was to make sure us 4 boys served the Lord. And if any time we ever said, boy, I'd like to go on a mission trip, they were 100% behind it and would help to make sure that worked out. But I said, so there my mom and dad passed it down to me. And I said, and now I am passing it down to my daughter who's here. And so my daughter, who didn't know what she was going to say, I said, so now I told a little bit about the family and stuff, and I said, so I'd like my daughter to get up and share what the Lord's laid a burden on her heart. And for a girl that didn't know what she's going to say, a half hour later, she's still talking and telling about how good God was or is. And it was so cool. Afterwards, this little old guy, he's about 5'3". He was walking a little bit hunched over. And he had a pair of glasses on, and they had cracks down through the lenses. And they were taped together. And he was a homeless man. They come in because they get free food if they sit and listen to a sermon. And so my daughter, after we was done, he came up to her, and he had tears in his eyes. And he said, little girl, what you just said touched me, because I know my grandmother has always prayed for me. And he said, I haven't talked to my family in 10 years. And he said, I'm going to go make an attempt to get back with my family because of what you said. And that was Holy Spirit giving us the words to say at the time we needed it.
Right, yeah. There's a preacher that I really like. Erwin McManus. I don't know if you ever heard of him. He's a pastor in L.A., and they actually meet at a nightclub because it's the only place kind of big enough that they can rent that isn't open on Sunday. So they I don't know if they still do. They might have built a building by now, but that was one of his things. If he would go speak somewhere, as he wouldn't, he wouldn't prepare anything. He would just go, and whatever the Spirit of the Lord laid upon his heart to say, he would speak about. And so, like, you know, you think about organizations like Promise Keepers would get really upset because they're so organized, and they want to put his verses on the screen, and they want to do all this stuff. And he's like, what are you going to talk about? He's like, I don't know. He's like, I got to meet some people. I got to shake some hands. I got to feel the spirit of the room. I've got to. And someone asked him, how can you do that with no notes? And he's like, well, you got to know your Bible.
Yes.
Like, you spend your time in the Bible, and when you get up there, the Spirit of God will lead and direct. He's like, it actually is more work that way than it is to prepare a sermon and to give what you've prepared, because you have to study a whole lot more. You don't know what's coming, you know?
Yeah. My son-in-law is a Presbyterian pastor, and he said, about 10 hours sitting down, writing his sermon, typing it, making sure it's grammatically correct. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing is, I am the best butcher of the English language that there ever was, and he don't know how in the world that I ever get to talk to anybody that I am not so grammatically correct as I need to be.
Yeah, that's all right. I my wife is in the school system, so she's a guidance counselor and is very good at English, and I'm not, you know, so I'll kind of, like, run stuff by her and, like, think about talking about this and kind of give her the idea, and she's like, well, one of those words isn't a word. You know, so you might want to reconsider. Like, you knew what I meant, though. So
yeah, when I was in Brazil, we had interpreters, and they would always say, "Johanna, we can't interpret for you because you don't talk right."
We have a newcomer to the podcast. Go ahead and introduce yourself. Talk into the mic.
Tell them your name.
Being shy.
Shay. This is my granddaughter, Shay.
Yeah, no one will see you, so you don't have to worry. It's just your voice.
Yeah. And the cool thing about Shay is she's 8 years old. She lives with Grammy and me. And we are just so blessed to have her, that we love her so much. And she loves going to Sunday school and to church.
What's your teacher's name in Sunday school?
Miss Janet.
What do you like about her class?
It's just, I'm usually the only one in there. We do a little craft thing every single time. We do a, I don't know.
Like a lesson?
Yeah.
Like a lesson?
Yeah.
And Shay is like me. we try to pack more words into a minute than most people. And when we travel somewhere, sometimes they'll put her and I in a car and everybody else goes somewhere else.
Grammy gets super mad whenever we talk a lot.
I drove somewhere with some friends of ours and their little girl, so I took all their kids actually, just to kind of give them a break. They got five, and we took all their kids, and the youngest one's a little girl, and she... I used to think that there was like a finite amount of combinations of words in the English language, and she pushed that boundary.
My wife always said if we got paid by the word, we would be millionaires.
Right.
Go ahead.
We're going to go on the vacation soon, and Grammy says, you have to sleep because all you're going to be doing for the whole entire trip is talking.
That's a good thing, though.
Well, we've got important things to say, don't we, Shay?
That's right.
We might sit in a different seat.
We'll probably sit. Yeah, Grammy puts us on the plane by herself. And she sits alone.
Where are you guys headed?
We are going to Seattle for 4 days, driving to Portland for 2 days, driving to San Francisco for 4 days, and then taking the train from San Francisco to Denver.
For one okay. whole day in a train.
That'd be cool.
I've never been on a train before.
I haven't either, actually. Except for, like, the one that they do. Have you ever been to the one in Oil City they do? And yeah. You can ride, like, the old-timey train. And
Oil
it was,
City
like, 98 still. Degrees, and I fell asleep, so it wasn't that fun.
Yeah. Shay must be done.
Yeah, she's opening candy. So, you still going? All right. But I did a trip with a friend of mine. It's one of the best vacations I've ever taken. He was in the Army, and he was stationed in Alaska, and he called and said, what do you, like, how much vacation time you got banked up? I said, well, I've only got 6 days left. And he's like, would you like to fly into Anchorage and drive with me as far as you can? I'm driving to Georgia.
Wow.
So I was like, definitely, yeah, that'd be awesome. Well, I made it to Los Angeles. That's all the farther 6 days would get us.
Uh-huh.
But going down the Alcan, the Alaska-Canadian
yeah.
Highway, and which was pretty cool. Something else that was neat was, like, from Anchorage, you have to drive north for a little ways to catch the road to come down into Canada.
Yeah.
You know? So it's, like, a little bit of a weird trip. But Seattle was by far my favorite city. Like, if I had to live in a city, it'd be Seattle.
We, with seven kids and seven spouses and 12 grandchildren, when we go on vacation, we go en masse. And our son got married in Phoenix. There was 22 of us went. We went to Hawaii in 2013. There was 22 of us went. We are going now this vacation. Now there's 15 of us going. And so when we go, it's one big mass caravan. And we have a great time.
They have their own personal plane.
Yeah, right. I say you, like, increase a significant percentage of the city, like, population. When you
yeah.
Yep.
Our vacations are usually just me and Grammy, and we go visit Uncle Ethan and Uncle Teddy. But whenever we do this vacation, it's not just me and Grammy.
Yeah.
We have a son that lives in Tucson, and he used to live in Florida, so Grammy and her used to go down, and I'd stay home and work. And so one time I said to Shay, I said, can I go on vacation with you and Grammy? She said, no, Papa, you need to stay home and make more money so I can go on more vacations.
Right. That sounds good. Can I be adopted here?
When we went to Hawaii for 2 weeks, we had a lot of people want to be adopted.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah.
There's this one boy that Papa, he, his name's Cloudy, and he wanted to go home with him.
Oh, Claudio. When we was in Romania. I've been over to Romania
yeah.
3 times.
You were there. My wife was there. My wife taught school for the girls 4 or 5 years ago.
Your wife is?
Amy. It was Amy Whitling, but now
yes.
it's Schweitzer, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's my wife.
Your last name's Schweitzer.
It is, yeah.
My wife's a Schweitzer. She was a Schweitzer.
From?
Knox.
Okay, yeah. We're probably related. Yep. I always tell people
you
that.
Have no
ask,
idea.
I say,
yeah.
We're most likely related, but somewhere along the line, our family just didn't care for each
yeah.
other. So
Amy
yeah.
was there, and
yeah.
she was a wonderful young lady.
She yeah, still is. Yeah.
Still is.
Yeah.
I haven't seen her. Well, I saw her when Isaac preached here last time
mm-hmm.
and talked to her
yeah.
for a few minutes.
Yeah.
But, yeah, she was wonderful. She went hiking with us.
Yeah. I'm sure she spent as much time with you guys as she could just because
yeah.
you spoke English. And it was a chance to speak to a human that understood what she was saying without having to eat something.
I am just a 63-year-old kid.
Yeah.
So when we was in Romania, I thought it was so funny. I'd go out and play soccer in the street with the kids. Well, they could outplay me any day of the week.
Right.
So I had to cheat really bad to even get the ball.
Yeah.
But then in the mornings, the kids would be walking outside the compound, and I could hear them hollering over the fence, "Can Joe come out and play?" Because I would go out and play every chance I got. We did everything we needed to do. But ministry is relationship. And
absolutely, yeah.
I love little kids.
Yeah.
And I love teaching little kids. And I just thoroughly enjoy my mission trips.
Yeah.
Aren't you the youth pastor or a youth leader in your church?
I was for probably 25 years.
Okay, but you're no longer anymore?
No, not right now.
Okay.
But he does teach a little class every morning.
I teach Sunday school class.
Oh, okay.
And like you say about preparation, I think it is so cool when Holy Spirit speaks, and if I'm smart enough at the time to recognize it's him.
Yeah.
And my lesson a week or two ago was, as I was getting ready for church, I got my Bible out. I usually get up before everybody on Sunday morning, and I was reading my Bible a little bit, and I was thinking about, this is what I wanted to teach on. But then I looked over, and I saw a book of Shay's, and it was Jesus and the 12 Dudes Who Did.
Yeah.
And my lesson was on, are you one of the dudes or dudettes who did?
Yeah.
Or are you one of the ones who didn't because you didn't have time, and I've got to make money, and I've got to do this, and I've got to do that? Or is it Jesus is all, and let's do everything we can?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, we're, go ahead.
There's this thing that we did in our class upstairs. It was, you can go to the good place. Yeah, I read my Bible, I do that stuff. Or you could go down
the
bad path, or straight is Jesus.
Right.
So that's what we did in...
That was Children's Church.
Yeah, Children's Church.
Yeah.
And what church are you with?
Chapel on the Hill.
Okay, same one your grandparents got to?
Yep. Yeah, over in Edmonton.
Right. Great church.
Yeah.
I've never heard a negative thing about that church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We like it. I started going there my daughter was 15, and she's 42 now, so how many years that makes?
I don't know. 27. Math is not my
27.
Strong suit.
27 years ago.
Good job. Yeah. You know.
Are you done?
All right. Say goodbye to Shay, everybody.
Bye, Shay.
Something that does actually frustrate me quite a bit is, just as a pastor, and I guess a follower of Christ, but... is when I do hear negative things about a church. You know, and to me, it's, you know, this is still the body of Christ. You know, so don't run this thing down. And if there is something that's broke or hurt in it, go fix it.
Yeah.
You know, don't run it down to your friend or neighbor, you know, whatever, like, go make it right.
Right, yeah. You did a sermon on that a few weeks ago, like, with, you're doing a series on being a community.
Yeah, living in community. Yeah.
And you said, like, if you find, like, you're in your church and you're like, oh, I like this church, but I wish they had a better kids ministry. And you're like, well, then be the kids ministry.
Then make it better,
Exactly.
You know? Like, if you look at your body and you think, oh, man, I wish I had nicer biceps, like, then go get them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like,
you got to work at it.
Yeah. So it's going to take a little sweat.
Community must be the catchphrase of today.
I think so, yeah. And I think for a large, one of the reasons would be because we lost it, you know, for a long time, you know, in the church, especially, like, you look at the Acts church, that was how they lived, you know, they broke bread in each other's homes, they met in courtyards and in different places, and that was...
And if you look at people's houses in town, most of the old houses have big front porches, and everybody used to sit in the front porch in the evening, but now we go watch television.
Right.
And they used to walk up and down the street to go to town, go downtown to get something to eat or go to the store or something, but now we don't have those stores.
Yeah.
Right.
Because everybody goes to Walmart.
Right.
Right.
Except me.
And we are the most connected, disconnected society that has ever existed. We have more technology. We have more opportunities to be social. We have more chances to interact with other human beings, and we don't do it.
Right.
Every time I talk to my wife about something, I said, "Did you talk to them?" "Well, yeah." And I said, "No. Did you talk to them, or did you send a text to them, or did you do something else, or email them?" "Well, yeah." I said, "Then you didn't talk to them."
That's right, yeah.
"Did you physically talk to them and hear their voice?"
Yeah, that was something. I deleted my Facebook account and every other social media account I had because, like, instead of calling my friends from college and seeing how they're doing, I would get on Facebook and see how they were doing and then, like, log off, and I never had to actually interact with the person. Yeah.
Right.
Social media is the most unsocial thing
it
that
is.
There ever was.
It absolutely is. Yeah.
And it started with the transistor radio with earphones.
Yeah.
And I remember going to youth functions on a bus, and I'd say, "Why are you just sitting there with earphones in? You could be talking to somebody and finding out about their life,
right,
or finding out what they're doing or what they felt or how they enjoyed the services or how they did this or that. But you're sitting there just staring blankly ahead, mm-hmm, not listening to anything."
Yeah.
Right. So that was, and that's actually a part of why we're kind of doing this thing, is trying to get people that people wouldn't normally interact with because, you know, they got their headphones in or they're staring at their cell phone. But, you know, it's like, "Oh, hey, there's a neat guy that lives in my, I don't know who he is, but I'd like to go," you know what I mean? So we're just trying to connect people with other people. So we call it people you want to know.
I love listening to music, but I love talk radio more, because especially interactive talk radio, when they're discussing an issue and people call in, I love that stuff.
Yeah. Me too. I listen to several podcasts, and the ones that you can tell, in technology you can't tell through the audio, but you can a lot of times tell just in the way the conversation goes if the person's there or not.
Yeah.
So, like, you can tell if it's over the phone or if it's via Skype or, you know, whatever, video chat. Mm-hmm. You can kind of tell. Sometimes the audio is weird, but sometimes you can just tell, like, okay, that guy's probably not sitting in the room right now.
Right.
Yeah. But you can really tell when the people are having a face-to-face conversation.
Yeah.
You know, it's different. Body language, I mean, that's so huge. I don't think, give enough credence to body language and what that means. Like, because we're such a text society.
Yeah. I hate texting. Yeah. I hate electronics.
Yeah.
I hate cell phones.
He just got a new cell phone. It's a smartphone. Yeah, he calls it a dumb phone.
They're only as smart as the user.
Well, true. My old flip phone knew enough just to make phone calls and receive calls. It didn't do anything else except store phone numbers. And that's all a phone's supposed to do.
Yeah, I still say things like that all the time. Like, you know, they're making phones today that you can call people with?
Yeah.
They still have watches that tell the time instead
of all these random
things.
That's what mine. It's just a watch that tells the time.
The way that we come up with the transistor radio is the guy that owns Sanyo. I read this in Reader's Digest, so I know this, because I love to read.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he came in with a pack of cigarettes, and he laid them on the table. And he said, "I want you to make a radio that is that size that people can carry in their pocket."
Yeah.
And they said, "It's impossible. We don't have that technology." He said, "Then make it."
Make it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that then Dick Tracy had on a wrist TV.
Yeah.
And he would talk to people on his wrist TV. And people said, "Oh, that'll never happen."
Right.
Well, now they make watches you can talk into.
Yeah.
And so that stuff that used to be fictional is now coming true.
It's reality. And that's the thing, too, is like, some of these companies, like Apple or different companies, are making these things. Their innovation is several years ahead of what they're releasing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, their research and development's out ahead. Yeah. So the stuff that's out there is even more mind-boggling. But
my dad always said, there's nothing wrong with television for what it was invented for, or radio, he said, which is spreading the gospel.
Right.
But he said, we've perverted it into something else.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems to be the way it goes. I'm actually, I don't know if you saw the sign out front for Sunday sermon, is the danger of status quo, and how we as a people, Andy Stanley said this actually in a leadership talk. He said any organization, he was talking about churches and businesses and stuff, but it applies to our lives. He said any organization is subconsciously conspiring against itself to maintain the status quo.
Mm-hmm. And that makes sense.
Yeah. And think about your own life, though. Like, your life, you are subconsciously conspiring against yourself to maintain status quo.
Yeah.
So if I'm not fanning the flames of my faith, then it's cooling off.
Yeah.
You know, like there's only two directions there.
Right. If you're not moving ahead, you're going backwards.
Right.
Exactly.
Because you don't stagnate.
Right.
No, it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
You know? So that's kind of what I'm talking about Sunday, is how the community of faith kind of brings us up in such a way that we can fan those flames a little bit more. You know, it helps us to see those blind spots. It helps to keep us from being prideful, you know, and different things that the community can do. Yeah.
I love going to church on Sunday. I just love it. And if I don't get to go, something's wrong for the week. And my dad impressed upon us, you need to be in church on Sunday morning, to the point that I'm 63 and I bet I haven't missed 20 Sundays in my lifetime.
Right.
Because my dad's theory was, and I agree with this, that the only time you don't go to church is when you're too sick, and you're never too sick to go.
Right.
Because if he felt our head and we were still warm, it's like, okay, you're good enough, you can go to church.
That's right.
Because you won't feel any worse there than you do at home.
Right.
So you might as well be there hearing the Word of God.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and, a few months ago, I was sitting in my office, and I was kind of last minute. One of the things I like to do is I use little tiny post-it notes, and I stick them in my Bible where each, on the page of each verse that I'm going to use, so I can get there before everyone else.
Yeah.
You know? And so that's kind of one of the last minute like prep things that I do. It's part of my routine. And I have my son, he's almost 3, and he's sitting on my desk. So he's sitting on my desk beside me, and something that Amy and I really are trying to, because we understand that like the song Son of a Preacher Man, that song exists for a reason. You know, like there's a reason, there's a stereotype of preacher's kids, you know.
Yeah.
And we want to avoid that, you know, as parents. So we don't want our kids to see it just as a job. We want them to see it, the calling in it, and we want them to see us serving with joy and, you know, doing the work of the Lord. So anyway, I always take the opportunity to have him with me while I'm working, you know. Mm-hmm. And so he's sitting on the desk beside me, and I'm working, and then all of a sudden he just throws up everywhere, all over the floor and the desk, and himself and everything. So I grab him and I put him over a trash can, and he's still, everything's coming out that he'd had for breakfast, and I'm yelling for my wife. I can hear her talking in the hallway, and like, I'm not a yeller. I don't like yell very often. So like when I do, I feel like she should respond to that. But like the third or fourth one, like time I yell at her, like I hear her go, I wonder what he wants. And I'm like, get in here. That's what I'm yelling, you know, I'm telling you what I want. So she comes in, and he's covered in throw up, and my office is covered, you know. And none got on me, thank the Lord. You know, I didn't have to go home and change, but like, I was like, why don't you take him home? I think he might not be well enough to be here.
Yeah. So. I heard the Focus on the Family one time, Jim Dobson and his wife Shirley were getting ready to go somewhere. And just as the sitter got there, their son Ryan had machine gun diarrhea. At the same time, he vomited right down the back of her dress. So she had everything all over the front and everything down her back. Right. And she was all dressed, ready to walk out the door.
Right. It wasn't that bad. Yes. Yeah, but kids are different. You know, like he probably could have stayed because like it's like, they throw up and then like, I'm fine now.
Oh yeah.
You know, so I'm like, how in the world? I'm down for days, you know.
Yeah. They're pretty resilient.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So tell us your testimony a little bit.
Do you want to spend the night here? Should I hold it down to half an hour?
Yeah, throw it in there, yeah.
Okay. It was really cool. I was sharing my testimony at Sunday school the other day. And I said, I still remember where I was sitting. Holy Spirit impressed upon me, because Holy Spirit has to bring us to salvation.
Right.
And so he impressed upon me, and I remember right where I was at the altar. I remember it was like January. We was having a end of the year revival, bringing in the new year, and it was either January 2nd, 3rd, or 4th. That I got saved, And I still remember being at that altar and crying, but I don't even know what I was crying about.
Right.
And when I got saved, I got whole hog saved. There was just no partial.
Right.
And I went into it with both feet, with everything that was in me.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really cool is 6 months after I got saved, there was a trip going to Brazil, and I went to Brazil on my first mission trip. It was my second mission trip. And so I went to Brazil and came back with the baptism of the Holy Spirit, and I was just immersed in Jesus and in love with him to the point that I needed to tell everybody.
Yeah.
It was so cool.
Right.
So cool. But then that's been 1974, and what is it now? It's been 44 years?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
yep.
44 years.
Yeah, because I'm 34. I was born in 84. So.
Yeah.
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 And it has been getting more exciting every day.
Right, and that's, you know, kind of, you know, you got to be growing, not,
right.
There's no third direction there.
Yeah.
But when I was 15, I went on a mission trip to Haiti, and God touched me on a mission trip before I was even saved. And it was 1971. We go down to Haiti, and it was really cool. We go out, and from where we were staying, we drove about 2 miles out the road, made a left and drove about a mile or two back in, and we passed the witch doctor's house every day.
Right.
And at night, we'd be sitting back where we were staying, and we'd hear the voodoo drums playing.
Okay.
And so here we are. We're starting the foundation for a church and the foundation for a pastor's house right next door to it. And bless the Lord, I got to go back to Haiti in 2011, which was 40 years later. And I was, right now I'm a carpenter. God put that on my heart. That's what I'm to be and where I'm supposed to be. And so as I'm down in Haiti, I'm jacking up this building, and I needed a hydraulic jack. And the guy said, well, we'll go back here, and we'll bore one off one of the mechanics. And so we're back in the back of the compound, and this guy's looking at me, and we're boring a jack off him. And he asked the interpreter, he said, ask him if he's ever been here before. And I said, well, yeah. I said, I was here in 1971.
Yeah.
And he said, what did you do? And I said, well, we started a parsonage, and we started a foundation for a church.
Mm-hmm.
And I rode here a couple miles back in. And he said, would you tell him thank you? Because he said, that's the church I go to, and I got saved there, and I remember him being here working.
Huh.
And so 40 years later, the Lord's bringing back the blessings of being on that mission trip and what's happened.
Right.
And it was just so cool.
Yeah. And that's the, you never realize the impact you have. You probably won't realize the impact you have until glory, you know, when you get to the other side, because, like, you know, you're not going to return to a lot of these places you've been before, you know, so.
I worked with Joy in Franklin for 10 years. About 10 years after I lost my job there, they laid off a whole bunch of guys. And I was at this Christian's concert at the old Cranberry High School. And this guy walked up to me and said, hey, Joe. And I said, Ray, what are you doing here?
Mm.
Because when I knew him, he had long hair and smoking a lot of dope. And he said, remember all that stuff you used to tell me about Jesus?
Yeah.
He said, it finally sunk in.
Yeah.
He said, 4 or 5 years ago, he said, I came to know the Lord. And he said, I'm enjoying this stuff.
Yeah.
And I just think that's so cool.
That is.
When God gives you the blessing of meeting some of the fruits of your labor.
Right.
And, I've had a lot of non-fruits where people have told me off a few times.
Sure.
That's okay.
Yeah, that's part of it.
That's just part of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's what makes life exciting.
Absolutely.
Yeah, plus those non-fruits, you don't know if maybe later, you know, something did happen and that you just don't know of. Yeah. You know, there's impact later on that happens, so.
I was a salesman for 20 years, and in my life, everyone is a potential convert to Jesus, and everyone is a potential customer.
Right.
So you live your life knowing that everyone is watching you every second of every day.
Right.
And if they're not watching, somebody down the road is watching, or somebody's hearing what's going on. And another thing that God blessed me with is I've got a guy that I work with whose wife left him, and my first wife ran off 21 years ago and left me and the kids. And I know what this guy's going through.
Right.
And so he's been going through counseling, and then he comes and he works with me every day. And it's funny. He said, I went to my therapist on Friday night, and she told me you're doing a really good job.
That's great.
And I said, what am I doing? She said that just being there, you're hearing everything, you're taking the whipping when he has to just blurt something out.
Yeah.
And he don't mean it.
Right, yeah.
But it's just hurting, and he said, you don't hold it against me.
Right.
And I said, well, it's not you. It's the sin around you that's building up and causing destruction in your life, and we just have to fight this and overcome it. I said, but we're going to win the war.
Right, yeah.
I said, we've already won the war.
Yeah.
We just got to get through all the battles to get there.
Right,
yeah.
But, yeah, and to hear the therapist say that I was doing a good job.
That's nice. I wasn't
even trying to do a good job. I was just trying to be his friend and live Jesus in front of him.
It's amazing how things work when you do what the Bible says.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, well, I just doing what the Bible said. And like, oh, it's working.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. You're an outdoorsman, avid outdoorsman. Do you hunt like everything, or is there something that you just like? I'm big into whitetail. I like the whitetail deer quite a bit. I like to hunt that. But
I have been whitetail hunting. There's three holidays in the year. That's Christmas, Easter, and first day of buck season.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's just all there is to it. And our whole family hunts. There's four of us boys, and our sons all hunt. And now I got my grandsons hunting with me, and it's just so much fun. We hunt whitetail, we hunt bear. I've been caribou hunting, I've been mule deer hunting, antelope hunting. We're trying to get an elk license that hasn't come through yet. But
you trying to get a Ben? Is that one or one out west?
Both.
Both?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been thinking about trying to get like preference points and starting to build them up, you know, build them up for 5 or 6 years and then see if I can cash them in and get a Benazet license.
Well, I've been doing it ever since they've started, and I missed maybe 1-2 years.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many preference points I have, but...
A lot.
I should have a lot.
Yeah.
But one of these days.
Yeah.
And Lord willing, if it'll come through, and if it don't, that's okay. I must not have needed one of them.
Right. I hear elk is like the meat that all other meats are measured by.
Yeah.
Like it's the best you can get. You know?
Yeah, and we love the fish.
Okay.
Me and my guy lives 2 doors away from me. Him and I hunt together all the time. We fish together all the time. We bought a pontoon boat together, and we just really enjoy hunting.
Yeah.
And
it's so awesome to be able to enjoy those things, you know, like that. And I was telling my wife this. She's not a hunter by any means.
Mine ain't either.
Didn't grow up that way. Doesn't really understand it. But she came and sat in a tree stand with me, which is like phenomenal growth on her part, you know. but she spent an evening in the stand with me, and we had some activity. And the one buck was just too small. I wasn't willing to shoot him. I'm not going to use a tag on a tiny scraggly buck, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she got to experience some of that, so it was a good time. But you know, I tell her, like, we are so fortunate that the Lord has given us this to enjoy, like, and for no other reason than for our enjoyment.
Oh, yeah.
Like, go have fun, you know, and that, like, what a blessing that is, you know.
My when I go archery hunting, it's a whole lot like my fishing, that I get up in the stand and my kids say, Dad, you need to strap yourself in because we've seen you hunt. And I just sort of.
Oh, yeah.
And when I'm fishing, I just drown worms. And
yeah.
Everybody's catching fish, and I'm not, but I don't care. I'm having fun. I'm enjoying myself, and it's fun getting out there, and we do once in a while I catch fish.
Right. Yeah.
And once in a while a buck will stumble in.
Right. Yeah.
And we'll have a lot of fun. And but when we hunt, we mostly drive deer. We don't wait on them.
Yeah.
Except during archery season.
Archery, yeah. That's it's been several years since I've pulled my rifle out, you know. Just because my goal is always to be, I want to be the guy like standing at my window with a coffee thinking, man, it looks cold out there.
See, our dad hunted and we've hunted ever since, you know, we were 12. And the first day of buck season is just so alive because our whole family hunts, my uncles and my cousins, and there will be 20, 25 of us hunt together and we chase deer. And I am so afraid archery hunting that I shoot a buck so I don't get to go.
Oh, first day.
Oh, yeah. And so until they put the seasons together where you can shoot doe.
Yeah.
But just the effect of that boom when that rifle goes off is just...
Oh, yeah.
And in our hunting party, not this past year, but the year before, we got 110.38s, 3.7s, 3.6s, and 7 doe.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
And yeah. we took Isaac's two brothers and his
yeah,
dad.
Yeah, right. I was going to mention that. You take my dad and two brothers with you sometimes.
Yeah. yeah. And the fun thing is we love having kids hunt with us.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we always put the kids watching,
mm-hmm.
and they're always getting to shoot.
Yeah, they get the first shot, don't
yeah, they?
They
get yeah. the first yeah. shot. Kids always yeah. get first shot.
Of course, yeah. That's even growing up, like I've a few times a couple years ago, I was hunting with my dad, and I was like, I'm an adult now. Like, because he was like, I'm going to put you here, and then like I'll drive through. I'm like, Dad, I'm an adult now. I can take care of myself. Like,
yeah.
If you see a deer, shoot it, man.
Yeah. You know? Well, we will go out hunting, and we'll you always think, well, let the old people stand and watch.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And now the kids are treating me like that. And it's like, why don't you go over here and stand? It's like, I can still walk.
Yeah.
And it's like, Dylan's there, Dad. I'll walk for you. And it's like, mm-hmm. Dylan, I can still walk.
Yeah.
And it's like, you just go over there and behave yourself. And so... I have started more watching, especially since I had a new knee replacement
right,
in March.
Yeah.
I don't walk as much as I used to.
Yeah.
That's plus, something. You know, you scare them all off probably. That's you true. Know, you talk too much.
I didn't talk too much.
Well, that's good in a guy that's driving. You want him, you want him scaring the deer, yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. But and my dad, he's a really ridiculously good shot too. So like I get if I don't get on it pretty quick, he's putting it down.
What do you want to say? Okay. Yeah. My brother and I were talking. You always want your kids to be better than you.
Right.
You want them yeah. to have better jobs. You want them to have better houses. You want them yeah. to have a better life.
Mm-hmm.
And my nephew, this buck was running out across the field, and 330 yards running deer, he shot it and hit it twice.
Nice.
And my brother said, I could have never done that in my best day.
Yeah.
He said, Johnny is by far a better shot than me.
Yeah. My dad, he's a better shot than I am. I'll give him that. Well, he's a better shot than I am with a rifle. I'll smoke him 8 days a week with my bow.
Yeah.
But I practice 80, 100 yards, and he's a 20-yard shooter. So, like,
yeah.
Yeah.
My son-in-law was hunting with me before him and my daughter got married. And I thought this was so funny that a doe ran. We were about 100 yards apart, and a doe ran up between us.
Uh-huh.
And I've shot plenty of deer, and he hadn't shot that many. So I figured I'll let him have first shot. He gets first shot, and he misses. I shoot, and that deer goes rolling in a ball. And it was 100, 120 yards away. And so I'm standing there waiting for more deer to come out, see if anything, a buck
right,
comes out.
Yeah.
And he goes up, and he comes walking over, shaking his head. And he said, you shot that doe right in the head. And I said, he said, was you aiming for the head? And I said, of course I was, and remember that if you ever
that's
you're
right.
mean to my daughter.
Yeah, if you're ever running.
Yeah, if you're ever mean to my daughter,
yeah.
I'm a pretty good shot.
That's right. Yeah, you want them to be intimidated a little
that's
bit.
Right. Yeah.
We have one of our missionaries. Do you know Daniel Rojas? Do you know him by chance?
Mm-hmm. I don't think
probably
so.
Probably not, yeah. He knows Josh and Angie quite mm-hmm. well, and that's actually what brought them to our church, and we started supporting their mission. But he's in Costa Rica, and he's a, like, eighth degree black belt, like he's just a crazy guy, you know. But he said, he was talking to his daughter, and he said, you know, a lot of little girls will grow up and they'll be beautiful young ladies, and they will leave their father's home and they will marry a great young man and they'll settle down and start a life with him. He said, that's not your story. You're gonna stay with dad.
So, yeah.
He said, and if any boy comes around, I'll kill him.
I am so blessed. Two of my son-in-laws are the greatest thing that ever could happen.
Mm-hmm.
They treat my daughters with the utmost respect, and yeah. it's a blessing to have them as son-in-laws.
Right. And having a dad that treated them that way, I think, is a big part of young mm-hmm. ladies wanting to marry a guy like that.
Well, they put yeah. up with the idiosyncrasies of my daughters.
Yeah.
And we all have idiosyncrasies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And yep. they have some strange ones, but they're willing to put up with them, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. I always say marriage and the Ultimate Fighting Championship are the two places that you lock two people in a room and say, figure it out.
Yeah. Exactly.
Good luck.
And you know, after it's all done, the husband and wife kiss and make up.
Yeah.
And the guys that are older fighters, they all go over and hug each other.
They shake hands.
And, yeah, shake hands. Like, I just beat the crap out of you, and I'm so glad that you're here.
Yeah, I'm glad that I won that.
Yeah.
Tell everyone the four rules of, you know, finding a wife that you always taught me.
Yeah. I've been trying to teach Isaac on how to find women. And I told him, I said, the first rule is you find an ugly one because nobody will ever steal her off you.
Sure. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And the second rule is you get one with no teeth because then they can't bite you in your lip when you're trying to kiss them.
Sure. Yeah.
Because you'd hate to have a sore lip. And the third one is, you marry a fat one because you can hug them for an hour and never hit the same spot twice. And I said, the fourth rule is the most important. Always marry for money.
Yeah.
Because if you marry an ugly fat girl with no teeth and you love her, she'll buy you anything you ever wanted in life.
Yeah.
And he's not following them rules at all.
No, I'm not.
That's all right. He'll figure it out.
Yeah, one day.
I always really do tell the kids that. I gave my daughters a test to give their boyfriends. And the first question is, are you saved?
Absolutely, yeah.
And then second one is, how do you know you're saved?
Mm-hmm.
Then the third one is, am I saved? And if you put you don't know to that one, why haven't you asked me?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because that should be one of the first questions.
Right.
Yeah.
Because that was the first question I was interested in.
Right.
Is, are you saved and do you love Jesus?
Yep.
And if you do, then you're a good candidate here. That you've got the number one thing going here for you.
That's right.
Then we can work on a whole lot of other details after.
Right, yeah. The rest of it is negotiable.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. Right. But that, do you love Jesus? That's the number one.
Yeah.
Because that's the most important thing in life. And I've told my wife and everybody that knows me, if I get all seven of my kids, their spouses, and all my grandchildren to heaven, then I've done everything that I've ever set out to do.
Yeah. Yep.
Because the rest of it's just details in between.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I don't care how many cars you got and how many houses you got or what you've got.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
You want to say something?
They're whispering.
Yeah, don't want a little dead air here, but being able to repeat the words of Christ when he said, not one that you have given me have I lost, mm-hmm. you know,
uh-huh.
would be definitely like the goal of a father and a grandfather.
Yeah.
You know, like, Lord, you've entrusted these to me, and I haven't lost a single one. You know, like when I think he was praying that in the garden over his disciples.
Yeah.
You know, and I would definitely apply that to family raising.
Yeah. You know? My dad came from a family of 10 kids. And because of their faithfulness, my grandparents, God told them, all of your children will come to the Lord before they die.
Yeah.
And all 10 kids have come to the Lord at one point or another. And I have 46 or 49 first cousins on my dad's side.
Yeah.
And the attrition rate to Jesus is just keeps getting higher and higher.
Right.
Because they're coming more and more and more
right.
to him.
I can tell you for sure, like, not just because of my personal faith and the faith of my family. Like, my mother is really the one that got our family brought us to faith in Christ. You know, she mm-hmm. wanted to be in church, and so we started going, and our entire family ended up getting saved. But my life would look infinitely different even today if it wasn't for my mom's faith, because a few years ago, I lived in Lynchburg, Virginia,
mm-hmm.
and I was up for Christmas and was a single guy. I was 30 years old, single, wasn't really doing anything, you know. Well, I was working down there, but I was home for Christmas, and my mom was like, hey, why don't you come to the Christmas Eve service? And I said, mm-hmm. Mom, I think it was like Saturday night, and I was like, I'm going to be in church tomorrow morning. Like, I'm just kind of tired. I've been driving all day. I'm going to stay home. And she said, no, why don't you come with us? I said, no, Mom, I'm not going to do that. And she said, okay. So she goes in her room and puts on her makeup, So she goes in the room, she puts on her makeup, and she comes out and says, why don't you come to church with us? I said, no, Mom, I'm really tired. I'm just going to kind of lay back, watch some TV, and just rest a little bit. And she goes, okay. So she goes back in her room and puts her clothes on, comes out and goes, put your coat on, you're going to church.
So, there you go.
You don't argue, you know. Yeah. So this is, I put my coat on, I go to church, and met my wife that there night. You go. So yeah. That kind of worked out. You know, I'm glad that her faith was such that she required that I be. If I'm sitting around, I can sit around at church. You know.
Yeah. Exactly.
And yeah.
So, are you born again?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Good. Okay. Because I asked Isaac. I said, "Is your pastor born again?" And he said, "Well, yeah." And I said, "Well, did you ask him?"
Yeah.
I did this.
It's a reasonable question.
Yeah. I did this to a Methodist pastor in Barkeyville. I went over, and he just got there, and I said, "Hi, my name's Johan. I'm born again. I just wanted to see if you are." And he said,
"Yeah,
I sure am. Come on in. Let's have a good time."
Yeah.
And we talked about the Lord. Mm-hmm. And so then he left about 5 or 6 years later, so they got a new one. So I go over, and I said, "Hi, my name's Johanna. I am born again. I just wanted to see if you are." And he said, "Well, that's a stupid question." He said, "I'm a pastor." And I said, "That doesn't mean that you're born again,
because
I know some who aren't." And he said, "Well, that's a stupid question." He said, "Why would I be a pastor if I'm not born again?" And I said, "I don't know that."
Yeah.
"But you still haven't told me
You haven't
if
answered
you
the
are.
Question. Yeah.
And he said, "Well, of course I am."
Yeah.
And he didn't like me after that.
Yeah.
But I don't care. You know?
No. And like I said, it's a reasonable question.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like to ask everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if they get annoyed at you asking them, then they're not excited enough about Jesus to say, "Let me tell you about him. I'll tell you what's going on."
Right.
Yeah. And I hate you say to people, "Hey, what's going on?" "Same old, same old." And being a carpenter, I go to 84 Lumber in Grove City all the time. And I go in, they say, "How you doing?" I said, "I'm doing excellent. You want me to tell you about it?" "No." And one guy said, Are you ever doing anything other than being excellent? And I said, not very often.
Yeah. I always like to say live in the dream. Because I was at the chiropractor today, getting tuned up a little bit, and he was like, "So how you doing?" I said, "I'm really doing well." And it's like, I'm not just saying that. I've got healthy kids. I've got a great marriage. I've got a great job. Like, God has been blessing me over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and things could get worse. Things maybe could get better, but I'm in a good spot because God's been blessing me. You know?
Yeah.
And that's just.
My dad was dying of cancer. He got diagnosed with cancer, and they told him he had 60 days to live. 30 months later, he's still alive.
Yeah.
And he's in the last throes of it. And I said, "How can you do this every day not knowing if this is going to be your last?" And he said, "It might be your last, too."
Right.
And I said,
"Doing
well,
your life, yeah."
And he said, "But you know," he said, "the way I figure it," he said, "if I wake up tomorrow, I'm going to have a good day."
Yeah. Yeah.
He said, "If I don't wake up tomorrow, I'm going to have an even better day."
That's right.
And he said, "I'm going to be really excited." And he said, "I'm going to miss you boys and your mom. But," he said, "I know I'm leaving her in good hands."
Yeah.
"That you four boys will take care of her." And he said, "Someday, I know every one of you are going to come see me."
Right.
Yep.
And he said, "So I don't have a care in the world."
Yeah.
Yeah. As long as you can know that one day, you know, like most people are scared because, you know, they have people that they want to see. But if you are confident that you will see those people again, you can go in peace, you know?
Yeah.
My mother was always up for a joke or having fun. And my mom made our growing up so much fun. And she was on a bunch of medication. And she got sick and her heart started failing. And so we take her to the hospital. And the doctor said, "Your mother's not going to make it. She's only got 3 or 4 more days to go." Mm-hmm. And so us four boys say, we told her, we figured we better tell her.
Right.
And so if there's any last things she wanted to say to anybody or do. And so my oldest brother said, "Mom, we just come in to tell you that because you quit taking your fluid pill, fluid is built up around your heart and your heart is almost stopped and you've only got 3 or 4 more days to live." And she said, "Boy, this ain't how I planned my summer." and she laughed about it clear to the end.
Yeah.
And she knew she was going to heaven, and she wasn't worried, and she was going to see Dad, and she told us all goodbye, and she loved us, and she went to glory, and we were excited, and both Mama and Dad, at the funeral home, we used it as a testimony to share the gospel with other people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And see that Bible laying open there? It's like, "And we shall be like him."
Yeah.
And, you know, "We will go to be with him." And there's little cards there with the writing on it, you know, scripture verses, you know, "You can come be with me," and, you know, on and on and on. And we use it as testimony, and that's what I want.
Yeah.
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 That's a friend of mine, Dean Sherwin. We called him Papa because he just adopted the whole world. You know, if you got within 10 feet, you know, you were his kid. But he and his wife, Ellen, were just amazing people down in Lynchburg. And he was working under his car, and the jack kicked out, and the car fell on top of him. And he struggled for a minute. From what I understand, I wasn't there, but he struggled for a minute and then just sang praise until the Lord took him, you know. And the paramedics are there. They try and resuscitate him. Of course, there's nothing they could do. He was crushed, you know, by the vehicle. But they're trying to, they're talking to his wife, and his wife is consoling the paramedics, you know, telling them it's going to be okay. She knows where he's at. You know, she's not worried one bit, you know. And and they were robust and healthy people, but within a few, I think it was just a couple months, she went home with him.
Yeah. You
know, and that when they had gone, it was the first time in my life, at least, that I had felt jealousy that they were with the Lord, you know, and I knew for sure that they were with the Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
And I had that little bit of, like, they're seeing Jesus right now, and I'm a little jealous of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a big ice cream eater.
Yeah. He made me promise to buy him ice cream if he behaved himself today. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's out the table.
Yeah. And so what I want at my wake or rejoicing party when I'm gone is I want everybody to get ice cream sundaes and get up to the microphone and tell how I picked on them.
Yeah,
and how embarrassed they felt, and how they picked back. Because I pick on everyone, and I tease everybody, and I put everybody in embarrassing situations, and it's just wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. He gives us all nicknames, too. Like, mine's Hound Dog.
Yeah.
And what's funny about that is we were working at, I don't know her name, but we were working at her house. He works with my dad sometimes, and we were putting up roofing, weren't we?
Ceiling in the living room, yeah.
Yeah, and we were moving this old, like, dresser, china cabinet, something. But there was, the floor was unlevel, so there was a book propping it up. We open, like, we find that book, we pull it out. And I, like, happen to open it up, and I realize it says the title of the book is The Hound Dog Man. And I'm like, oh, look at this.
Come on over here, Hound Dog, and help me carry this. That's right. The Hound Dog Man.
That's right.
That's great.
And then Ian is Ivan the Terrible, isn't he? Yeah, which is quite ironic for Ian.
Seth is Lefty.
Lefty. Yeah.
Lefty, okay. He's gone by Lefty and the One-Armed Bandit, so I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
But I want everybody to pick on me. Yeah. Whenever I'm going, get up and say all the stuff that I did.
Yeah.
Because it's just so much fun.
Right. Yeah. And that's what we're looking actually kind of forward to.
To me dying so you can get up and make fun of me.
Yeah, so I make fun of you without getting it back.
That's right.
Like a free shot. Actually, for Amy's mom, do you know Linda?
Yes.
She does some of the most ridiculous things a human has ever done. And so we're just looking forward to, like, not looking forward to losing her because it'll be a huge loss for the family, but, like, just being able to reminisce of the life that she lived and the stories that we can tell about
her. Amy is actually my wife's first husband's cousin.
Right, yeah, so.
Through a roundabout way.
Yeah, is that through Mary?
Through Grace.
Huh?
Grace Whitley?
Oh, I don't know. Oh, okay. I was thinking Mary Schweitzer. Mary Schweitzer married Ray Whitling.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And then that's how my wife was related, but her first husband was related through Grace.
Through the Whitlings. Okay. Yeah. Is that wasn't Ray's first wife, was it? What was her name? Do we know her?
No.
I couldn't. No. I'd never met her because.
Second wife because
she passed before.
Grace raised the boys.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
That's interesting.
Yeah, with 46 or 9 first cousins on the Hannah side and 22 on the Corson side, there ain't many people over home that I'm not related to in some way or know them from somebody.
It's a pretty small world, you know,
especially in Western Pennsylvania, you know.
Right, yeah.
Our son was out in Colorado last week. He was up on Pikes Peak and went to take a picture, and he asked this guy to take a picture of him. Found out the guy was from Sharpsville over by Sharon.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. We went on our honeymoon. We went out to Wyoming, went through Yellowstone, and we're in Montana a little bit, and we flew into Bozeman, Montana.
Yeah.
And we were talking to our landlord, and he said, my son lives in Bozeman. I'll call him. So a few days later, his son calls us and says, "What time are you guys getting in?" We said, "Oh, we're getting in pretty late." And he's like, "Well, don't get a hotel. Just come to my house." So like, we rented a car and just we stayed with him, and he opened his home, and like it was really cool. That like our landlord, his son lived where we were flying into, and like we had no clue. But it was pretty cool.
Yeah,
pretty cool. Yeah, I'd love to live in that part of the world.
Oh, Rocky Mountains are beautiful.
Yeah,
I'll tell you one of my goals before I die is we have 12 grandchildren, and my wife and I would like to take every one of them on a short-term mission trip,
right?
Somewhere.
Yeah.
Before we die.
Yeah.
And get them in love with missions and get them in love with traveling.
Right.
And already, you know, like I say, we've been to Hawaii together. We've been to Arizona. And what our family does is every 5 years we take a big vacation.
Right.
En masse.
Right.
And all seven kids, their kids, and are invited. And if they want to bring friends, that's fine.
Right.
And so, yeah, in between the big family vacations, we want to take the grandkids on
mission trips.
Mission trips.
And I can always tell our church, that's how a church tithes, is it gives to missions.
Right.
Yes. You know, so our church is close to, we're a little over 40%, and I want to see us at 50%. You know, I read the Bible, and it tells me to love my neighbor as myself. So I need to be doing as much for him as I do for me, right?
Yeah. Your church gives 50%?
We're trying to. We'd like to. We're in the, like, low 40s right now.
Wow.
But we'd like to be
that's unreal.
We'd like to be at 50. Yeah, it's we deny ourselves some things so that we can give to missions.
Yeah, the guy who wrote Purpose Driven Life,
Rick Warren.
Rick Warren, I think it was him that I heard on the radio that him and his wife tithes 81 or 89%.
Yeah, somewhere in there. Yeah,
because he said God has given us so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I don't know if you ever heard of Chuck Smith in Calvary Chapel.
Yeah,
Costa Mesa. Yeah. Chuck said he died here a couple years back. He said, my church keeps giving me raises, and he said, I keep telling them I don't need the money.
Right.
I'm already giving you like 50 or 70% of what I make back because I don't need it.
Right.
Yeah. But they keep giving him raises because they're so excited about what he does, and it's like, he said, they don't do it because they know they're getting it back.
Right.
He said, they just want to bless me.
Right.
And he said, so I bless them back. And
but that's where his blessing is, too. You know, he's being blessed by giving. You know?
Oh, yeah.
That's a...
And I think that would be an amazing thing to give that much away.
Yeah.
But if you're able, why not?
You know? Well, that's something that Amy and I do, is that, and that's where I think a lot of people get stuck in that mindset. I'm going to disagree with Isaac here for a minute. I don't think we give out of surplus. We should give out of need.
Mm-hmm.
And and like when Amy and I, because there's times we're a young married couple, we have school loans and all those things that are going on, but... Well, there's times where our finances get tight, and we've just made the conscious, like, the commitment to the Lord that I will tithe more when things get tight.
There's an old guy who lives up by Sandy Lake, and him and a guy owned a Chrysler dealership in Franklin, and they went bankrupt. And he said, you know, it was amazing. He said, here I was 60 years old, $175,000 in debt, and this has been 30 years ago.
80.
What's that?
How old was he?
He was probably 60 at the time, and he was in his 80s at this time.
Right.
And I think he was in his 80s, maybe 75. But anyways, he said, I was $175,000 in debt. And I said, wow. I said, what'd you do? And he said, I tithed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, within 10 years, he said, everything was paid off.
Yep. Yeah.
And he said, God blessed me. And he said, you see, he said, I have everything I need. He said, I'm not missing any meals. He said, I've got a couple old cars out here I'm restoring.
Yep.
And he said, and my wife and I, we go visit our kids. And he said, we have everything that we really need. And he said, we don't have extravagant because he said, we don't need that.
Right.
And he said, we don't even really want that. But
right.
he said, the tithing is what God, and he said, when you tithe and when you give over and above your tithe, he said, God's going to bless you because he promised that. And do we believe him or don't we believe him?
Right. Yeah. And that's where it's like, you know, like I said, when you know, if finances get tight, we just give a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because I need, at least maybe just for myself, the reminder that this job isn't what sustains me, that Jesus Christ sustains me.
Exactly.
You know, and that's even just a reminder for me, because he already knows. He doesn't need to be reminded.
Yeah.
But I do, you know.
Yeah.
And it bolsters our faith, because I can't tell you a time that we went without.
Yeah.
You know, that like the one time, or actually twice now, the IRS has contacted us and said, you paid us too much. We're giving you even more than we like did before. And I'm like, when has that ever happened?
Yeah. I had an uncle and aunt, and this was back in the 60s. And back in the 60s, the average guy was making dollar and a half an hour.
Right.
And so that was only, what, say, $3,000 to $5,000 a year.
Right.
And the IRS audited them because they gave 20% of their income, and they were raising six kids.
Right.
And
that
they
doesn't add up.
Yeah. And they said, you can't do this. And they said, well, we have receipts for every penny we've claimed.
Right.
On our taxes. And they said, but nobody can raise kids, six right. kids, and give away 20% of their income.
Yeah.
And they said, well, God means a lot to us, and
we
want to bless him. But you can't do that. And they said, right. well, we have receipts.
Yeah.
Well, you still can't do that. And they couldn't do anything about it because everything was legit.
Right. Yeah. And we don't serve a chump God.
Not at all.
No. And that's what, you know, there's that always that debate in the church that whether someone can lose their salvation or not, which I don't understand the debate because I feel like the Bible's pretty clear on that. But I always say, if you can ever walk away from an experience with Christ, like, you probably didn't have one.
Yeah.
If you can walk away from that unchanged.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
If Jesus really, truly got a hold of your heart, you don't walk away from that.
I'm reading a book right now. You ever read Frank Peretti's Present Darkness?
Mm-mm.
And it's a fictional book about the spiritual warfare going on around us.
Yeah.
And, you know, I used to think, you know, guys got to be tough. But I cry more anymore.
Yeah.
When my kids do something or my grandchildren do something, I find myself crying about stuff. And I was reading this book, and this girl was into Satanism, and she'd murdered her own baby, and on and on. And it's strictly fictional. And then she wrote a letter to a guy right after she got saved. And even though it's fictional, it's just like, and when I found the true peace of Jesus dying on the cross, and that he accepted me for who I am, I'm just sitting there and tears are coming into my eyes because this guy has such an eloquent way of writing the same experience I had. Yeah. And then I was thinking about, and Holy Spirit drew me the same way.
Yeah.
And he wrote this, and I'm going to use it in Sunday school this coming Sunday. I'm going to read that to him because about three Sundays ago, I said, do you remember what it was like the day you got saved?
Mm.
And if it wasn't so dramatic, then you need to reevaluate this.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Not that you didn't get saved, but you need some more excitement in your life.
Right.
Yeah.
And my Jesus is a God of excitement, and there's such groovy things going on every day.
Yeah.
And people I get to talk to, and people I get to share the gospel with, and things I get to do. And I go to work on Mondays and I say, don't you love Mondays? Because we get to start a new week and we get to attack this week and we get to, and they say, you are one sick human being. And I said, no, I'm just looking at life with all the vim and vigor that God gave it to us with, and that we get to go out there and we get a whole new week to start again and accomplish things, and we get to talk to people about the Lord, and we get to do this. And they said, why don't you just go home? And it's like, no, I came here because I'm excited to be here, and even if it's work, God put me here, and I got something to do, and there's somebody I got to meet this week, and there's somebody that when I go to buy something, I go to the Ace Hardware store, and I get to share the gospel with them people there. And every day I walk in with a smile on my face. Are you ever sad? Once in a while, but I get over it real quick.
Right, yeah.
Because I serve a God who's worth being excited about. And when this is done, he's already seen it. And I was listening to the song, When You Don't Move the Mountains, When You Don't Part the Seas.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget what, Lauren Drunling or something sings that. When
Daigle?
You don't Daigle. Move the Lauren mountains. Daigle? What's that?
Daigle?
Yes, that's right.
Lauren Daigle,
But anyways, I was watching that video, and I'm thinking, and the one line in the song is, there's nothing happening that you haven't already seen.
Right.
And so you've got it under control, God.
Yeah.
And I'm just going through all the details here.
Yeah.
And I got to get past these details to see what you got in store for me later on. Yeah. And then I get more excited about it. It's like, wow, just think, Monday's going now Tuesday. I get to attack Tuesday. and everybody's like, wow, you weird.
Yeah. Well, we talked to the church about, like, when you think omnipresence, you think, like, God is in all places. But, like, that includes time. Exactly. So he is currently in the future. It's not that he's been there and he's come back. He's currently there. Yeah. And he's current, like, because he's bigger than time is.
Right.
You know, so he's currently in the present. He's currently in the past doing things. Yeah. You know, so
and
like,
the only reason time was created was for humans.
Right.
Because he didn't need it.
Yeah.
Because he's always been and always will be.
And it was created. Yeah. Well, it was observed and put into motion by humans. You know, he didn't, like, tell us the laws of time. He put them into place and then we just found them. You know, like, he didn't need to find them, just we did.
Yeah, and that's another blessing from him. He gave us that, the ability to be able to tell time.
I go to work the other day, and the guy I've been doing a lot of work for, he's opening up a bicycle shop. And I knew the guy that he was going to have run it, so I get to talking to him, and we get to talking about abstracts.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking about the Vietnam War and how my wife, that was one of her favorite history classes in college, and he said, I love talking about that, and then we got to talking about other things, and I said, and about the pyramids, and I know what it was. People in B-29s or B-24s used to clean their guns out, and they'd shoot at the pyramids and shoot at the Sphinx and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And he said, do you study into the pyramids and all? I said, well, yeah, I've read a book about it, and I said, how everything is laid out perfectly in line with everything celestial and everything.
Yeah.
And I said, it just proves that there's something bigger than us.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's not saved.
Yeah.
And so every time we get talking about it, I'd bring in the God movement into it and how God instructed the people who did that. And according to this writer, he thinks Enoch was the architect behind it.
Oh. And, interesting.
It's been a while since I read the book. But I got to keep bringing the pyramids back to God.
Right.
And I got to share in the gospel with this guy.
Yeah.
For 2 days straight, him and I was working together. And I got to share in the gospel. And I'd come home all excited and said, Robin, guess what I got to do today? I got to talk about the pyramids. And she said, well, okay, big deal. No, I got to tell Jeff about how God instructed the building of the pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife thinks I'm a little strange too, but that's okay.
Well, that's all right, yeah.
Yeah. But it all goes back to Jesus.
Right.
And all goes back to, he spoke it into existence. He spoke everything. And Isaiah 40 says about how he holds the heavens in the palm of his hand.
Yeah.
And just the span of his hand covers all the heavens. And it's like, and we think we can tell God what to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or that we can even be God in some people's minds.
Yeah, that's a joke I tell, that, you know, the biggest difference between you and God is he never thinks he's you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it all goes back, and I use this as an example. You know who Pistol Pete is?
Yeah. Yep.
Pistol Pete's father was one of the greatest basketball coaches there ever was.
Okay.
And he understood the intricacies of basketball to the nth degree. And so the Israelis hired him to go over and teach basketball. So he took Pete with him, and he goes over there, and everybody wants to be a hot dog, and everybody wants to dunk.
Yeah.
And he said, guys, stop. He said, go sit in the bleachers. And he brought a blackboard over, and he took a piece of chalk, and he put a little dent, mark on the blackboard. And he said, you see this mark?
Yeah.
He said, this is how much you know about basketball.
He said,
you see this room? He said, this is how much I know about basketball.
Right.
So if you're not going to listen to me, I'm going home.
Right, yeah.
Because he said, you know so little other than the hot dog things.
Yeah.
I know the intricacies of how to play and how to win.
Right.
Yeah.
And I use that with the same thing with God.
Yeah.
We think that we know as much as the room.
Right.
And God's saying, see that little dot there?
Yeah.
100 miles away, you can't see?
Yeah.
That's how much you know.
That's what you know right now. Yeah.
Yeah. And when people say, well, when I get up there, I'm going to tell God what's what. It's like, no.
Yeah, right.
You're going to be in such awe of his Shekinah glory that's shining on you. That you're going to just fall on your face and crap your pants.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not going to tell him what's what.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's the big lie we tell ourselves, is that we're something more than we actually are.
Yeah. And I don't get upset, but it's people not understanding. When they get mad at God because things happen, And I said, God is good.
Right.
And everything God instruments for us is good. Right. And anything bad that happens, that's Satan throwing a clinker into the plans, or else us throwing a clinker into the plans.
Right.
So why do we blame God for the bad things? Because he didn't do it.
Right.
Right.
He may have removed his protective hand for a minute to show us that, okay, when you take over for yourself, this is what's going to happen.
Right,
but if
yeah.
you let me wrap you in my love, and yeah. you climb up on daddy's knee and sit there,
yeah.
everything's going to be good. And once yeah. in a while, there's going to be a hiccup in there that I'm right. trying to teach you something. But all in all,
right.
everything I want for you is good.
Yeah, and a lot of times, like, you know, I was a Bible study last night. We were talking about kindness. We're going through the fruit of the Spirit. And you're just digging into the subject of kindness and saying that, God's not, a lot of people see kindness as weakness, and because they think, oh, I can take advantage of that guy, so he must yeah. be weak. He's a very nice person. You know, nice guys finish last. You know, there's that whole thing. But if you, God's not going to lead you to a place where you're going to be more broke down than you were before. So, like, even if you think about, like, the analogy of the gym, like, yeah, it stinks to be working out. Mm-hmm. That's really, like, it's not fun in the moment of, like, exercise. But you're better off than you were before.
Yeah.
And you're better, and you're where you're headed is even better. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like you said, you know, even the trial can be blessing.
Yeah.
You know.
I am 20 years on the opposite side of divorce.
Yeah.
And this guy that I work with, I tell him, you have already won.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that there's blessings 20 years later.
Right.
But right now, when you're in the midst of it, you can't see that.
Right.
And someday, you will be used by God for this as a testimony, if you allow yourself to be. But you have to allow yourself to be taught. And that was my one cry when my first wife ran off and left us, was, God, I can go through this with you as long as I know it's going to help somebody somewhere.
Right.
But if this is just because she wanted to go out and have a fling and live in sin.
Yeah.
And there's not going to be anything good happen from this. Then I don't want it. But
right.
I've got a beautiful wife now, and I've got four more kids, and yeah. I've got a whole bunch more grandchildren, and life is good, and
yeah.
God is wonderful, and we're growing, and my wife's excited about the Lord. And I think this is funny, too. This is another story about my family, is when we went up to New York City one time, I'm sort of an extrovert, if you haven't noticed.
Yeah. I caught on
a little
you.
Bit. Yeah, yeah. just a little bit. And my wife, she wasn't as much of an extrovert. And so when we go up there, we're ministering to homeless. And so I drive the van usually through the city. And we let people out when we see homeless and go over and talk to them. And she's sitting there in the van. And I spent 3 weeks talking her into going with me when we first got married. And I said, why don't you go out and talk to some of these people? And she said, I can't do that because, she said, I don't have anything to say. She said, you don't realize how sordid my past was. She said there was drugs and lots of alcohol and everything else involved. And she said, I did a whole lot of unsavory things. And I said, but that's under the blood.
Right.
And I said, so that's all gone. And you're starting brand new. Mm-hmm. Because she'd been saved for a few years. And if she wasn't, I wouldn't have married her. But
yeah.
So I said, just do this for me. I said, go out and stand behind Gary
yeah.
while he's talking to the guy and pray for him.
Right, yeah.
And so she gets out, and she's standing there praying for the guy, and she looks into his eyes. And all of a sudden she blurts out, you know why you take the drugs? Is because you hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And then you drink to erase the effects of the drugs. And then you take more drugs to erase the effects of the drink because yeah. you can't get rid of the hurt. She said, I yeah. know where you've been.
Right.
I have been there. I've seen the hurt. And she said, it has went on and on, and one tries to erase the other.
Yeah.
And I call that unleashing the monster because
yeah.
now my wife will walk up to total strangers and let me tell you about Jesus.
Yeah.
And but before that, she never had the encouragement to do it or never had the backing to yeah. do that. But when I unleash the monster, whoa, that monster is exciting.
Good, yeah.
Now she takes trips without me.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's really awesome. Cool.
So, well, we are...
We are almost out of disk space, actually. Yeah, we got 1 minute left, and the disk will be completely full.
So,
oh, cool.
So, yeah, well, thank you for coming out and, awesome. And chatting with us. Hopefully people listen and, you know, of course, like, learn about Christ and are encouraged and grow. But
yes, that's what it's all about.
It is.
It's all about Jesus.
There's no other... There's literally nothing else, so...
Yeah.
And Isaac has a new saying...
Oh, yes. Grooviness to the praises of the Almighty Lord.
Grooviness to the blessed praisers of the Almighty One.
Ah, okay.
You got to practice that.
All right. Yeah, I will practice and memorize that. He wants us to open with it every podcast.
Every podcast?
Grooviness to the praisers of the blessed Almighty Lord.
Close enough.
Close enough. All right. You know,
we'll write it down.
Yeah. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. Thank all you right. so much for having me, and I hope I didn't take up too much time.
No, not at all. Yeah,
I just love talking about Jesus. And
oh, we know.
He loves it.
That's true too.